This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
A podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It is a mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. I am Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. You can listen on the Odyssey app, you can listen on your radio, you can watch on YouTube and Twitch, as well as we are about 3 weeks out, 3 weeks from tomorrow as I record this. Today is Wednesday afternoon, getting ready for a little Houston Astros here in a couple of hours. And we've got a mailbag to get to as well, some follow-up from the league meetings, and a quick reminder on a few administrative items. So as we hit things off the top here, a reminder to subscribe to the podcast, give it a rating, give it a review. We're in that kind of lull period right now between free agency and the draft. So we'll probably have a couple weeks here of just mailbag episodes until we get up to the week of the draft, and then we'll have multiple episodes there. And then post-draft as we head into minicamp and OTAs and whatnot. So that's kind of the, if you're wondering why maybe not two episodes a week, I've been busy, it's been slow, and the mailbag feels like the best way to do it. So continue to tell a friend. During the season, we do three episodes a week. During training camp, we do one every day that there's a practice. So the busy season will be here soon enough. I can't believe it's April already. It's April 2nd. So there's that. So hit the subscribe button. Give us a rating. Give us a review. We appreciate that. As always, as I mentioned, today is a mailbag episode, houmailbag@gmail.com. You can see at the bottom of the screen there, if you're watching on YouTube, that's the email address. If you want to hit me with an email, we've got several today that we're going to get to on the show. And also a quick reminder that if you're listening to this on Wednesday, this should drop on Wednesday afternoon. Nick Caserio, Texans GM, is going to join me and Seth Payne on Sports Radio 610 on Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. So make a note of that. Put it in your calendar. This will be the first chance that we get to talk to him since the barrage of free agents that were signed. I believe, I'm pretty sure this is the first time, definitely the last time we'll talk to him probably before the draft. So there'll be a lot of talk about, this is definitely the first time we've talked to him because we've not talked with him about the Laremy Tunsil trade. So this is our first chance to chop it up with Nick post the Laremy Tunsil trade, post all the free agency signings, and pre all of the draft. And this should be a super intriguing draft. As we get closer, I'm sure more and more mailbag questions will be draft related. So ton of stuff to get to here in the mailbag. And again, Nick Caserio, 7:30 on Thursday this week on Sports Radio 610. I guess just as a follow-up to the league meetings this week, we did get to hear from D'Amico Ryans in a couple different interview scrums. We did get to hear from Nick Caserio on Texans All Access, both of them on Texans All Access. I thought the most interesting things that were discussed, the most interesting topic to me with D'Amico was him denying the toxicity in the offensive line room that had been reported by Albert Breer. That was the main thing I wanted to hear him speak about, was get his impression of whether or not that was an accurate report. And predictably, D'Amico denied that, essentially said that if there's any toxicity in the building on his watch, then that's on him. I do think that there was something clearly going on in terms of them wanting to change the culture of that room. I don't think I'm breaking any news or making any bold statements by saying that. If there weren't, Laremy Tunsil would still be a Houston Texan. They're finding plenty of ways to do things and keep guys that they want to keep. Laremy Tunsil plays a premium position at left tackle, and he's very good at pass protection, protecting C.J. Stroud's blind side. If they wanted to find a way to keep Laremy Tunsil, he would be on the team. They're finding plenty of ways to make moves this offseason and finding ways to pay a guy like Danielle Hunter an additional $36 million. So I think undoubtedly that the desire to change the tenor in that room, change the swarminess of that room, change the level of dog in that room was behind the Laremy Tunsil trade. So I think it comes down to it boils down to one of the most boring things in sports when it comes to discussions, which is where the argument ends up being just basically, how do you define a word? Those arguments to me are boring. You know, for example, saying somebody's a bust. Is this guy a bust? You know, is Ryan Leaf a bust? Was Jadeveon Clowney, you know, that was a big argument that I used to have with Rich Lord early on in Jadeveon Clowney's career, like after his rookie season where he had microfracture surgery, and Rich would say, thus far, he's a bust. And it's like, oh, he's injured. Bust to me was always, are you just shitty at your job? Not are you injured? So it comes down to a debate as to how you define the word bust. Similarly, I think this thing, once we've seen it reported by Albert Breer, the toxicity, and now we've seen D'Amico react to it, it really just boils down to how you define the word toxicity. To me, toxicity involves a lot of conflict and anger and angst. And even in Albert Breer's report about toxicity in the offensive line room, there was never any report of that. Just a report of Laremy Tunsil's, maybe his leadership chops, that he's just not maybe cut out to be a guy that people follow. Not that he's a bad guy, but is he a guy that can lead a room? There's a difference between people liking you and being a leader. And I think, unfortunately, I think with the Texans, at least the people that were picking captains conflated those two things. They're very different things. So I think it boils down to, I think the toxicity that Albert Breer speaks of is just a desire to change the tone of that room, the desire to change, to heighten the level of love for football, bloodthirst, desire to practice, all of those things. I don't think Laremy has any of those things, a bloodthirst, a desire to practice, or an extreme degree of dog. He's a very good football player who's extremely talented and can get away with not having those things because he's extremely talented. So I think when whoever's using the word toxicity was probably just using it as something's wrong, as opposed to what the real definition is, which is there's a lot of negativity that comes with the word toxicity. So that's my take on that. I tend to think that Albert Breer and D'Amico Ryans are describing the same phenomenon with that, or that maybe if Albert Breer had used a different phrase for it, or that D'Amico may have agreed with that. Who knows? You know, maybe publicly D'Amico may look at it and go, what's the use in throwing Laremy under the bus? We're moving forward anyway. So we'll see. Certainly something we'll ask Nick Caserio about on Thursday. D'Amico is very excited about C.J. Gardner-Johnson being on this team. And I think that move is getting a little bit overlooked right now with the people who are giving the Texans lower grades for their offseason. That is a real solidifying of the secondary. Not that the secondary needed solidifying necessarily, but there's really no weak link now in that secondary. You know, Kalen Bullock has some things he can improve upon as a second-year player, but he's a really good football player. And you throw in the fact that you still have Jalen Petrie and Jimmy Ward in that safety room. You know, Petrie's role is probably, especially now with C.J. Gardner-Johnson being there, his role as that star slot corner player is probably even more accentuated. I would imagine an extension for Jalen Petrie is coming down the pipe here at some point. That was another big topic at the league meetings, how the team approaches not just free agency, but taking care of their own. The message is very, very clear to players in the building with the Texans. If you come to work every day, you work hard, you keep your mouth shut, you put your head down, all of the different cliches you want to use for somebody who's just a worker, If you do that, you're going to get paid. And I think that message was clear with Nico Collins. I think that message is clear with Derek Stingley Jr. And I think that message is clear with Danielle Hunter as well. And I think Jalen Petrie, I don't think he's to the level of any of those three guys as far as the quality of player, but I think they'll make an offer for him that's a fair offer in an effort to keep him. They feel about Jalen Petrie and his leadership similar to how they feel about those other three guys I just mentioned. Jalen's a little bit more probably outspoken is probably the wrong word because I don't think he ever says a controversial word, but he's got a different energy about him. Definitely more of a trash talker on the field and things like that. So I think that could be coming down the pipe. My most entertaining moment, because I've had a few of you ask me about the league meetings in the mailbag. I'm sort of just combining some of the emails that I got into just one diatribe about the league meetings. The most entertaining part of the league meetings not involving the Houston Texans was definitely Jerry Jones saying, trying to justify negotiating a contract extension with Micah Parsons without involving David Mulugeta, Parsons' agent, somebody we're very familiar with here. He's also Deshaun Watson's agent. He's C.J. Stroud's agent. He's Derek Stingley Jr.'s agent. David Mulugeta is a powerful dude. And Jerry Jones saying that, I don't even know if I know his name. He said that about David Mulugeta when he was trying to justify working directly with Micah Parsons, or at least conversing with Micah Parsons directly on a contract extension, to the degree that it basically became reported that they had an agreement on a framework of a contract. And then it came out that that was news to David Mulugeta. Since then, Jerry Jones has botched this thing 10 ways to Sunday by insulting David Mulugeta, by saying he doesn't know who he is. I don't know whether to believe that Jerry is just doesn't know David Mulugeta's name, or if he's lying about that and he's doing it to kind of keep Mulugeta in his place. Neither is good if you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, but you guys have gotten used to things not being good for a while now. But I don't understand how they operate. I watch the Cowboys operate, and I am so thankful that I'm a Texans fan right now. Jerry Jones dragging his feet on big deals, overpaying for big deals that he could have gotten done months ago. Micah Parsons is somehow he's heading into the last year, the fifth year option of his rookie deal. How this has not gotten done is beyond me. And I know that there had been rumors about that maybe Micah, there's some people in the building that aren't big fans of Micah Parsons. I would say get it, whatever it is, get over it. He's an outstanding football player. And you let him walk in free agency, which I don't think they're going to do. It sounds like they're going to get a deal done. But if for some reason you didn't get a deal done with Micah Parsons, that defense, which already isn't that great, goes to shit. So I was very entertained by Jerry Jones, very thankful that this is Dallas's problem and not Houston's problem. I don't know how Cowboy fans do it right now. That's tough. But it's the Cowboys, so I don't give a shit. All right, let's get to the mailbag here. And let's start with Brian in Iowa. Says, with Brevin Jordan back, where does he land in the tight end room? Also, if you were a betting man, and he winks at me with an emoji when he says, if you were a betting man, where would you place the odds of Stover getting more snaps than Dalton Schultz? That's interesting. Let's do first half of the year odds and second half of the year odds, he says. Okay, well, let's... Brevin Jordan's an interesting one. I think there's a lot of Texan fans that don't realize Brevin Jordan signed an extension earlier this offseason. Might have been towards the end of the regular season, but he was, you know, he tore his ACL early in the season and he was gone all year, which is too bad because Brevin Jordan, they could have used him when they lost Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs. Brevin Jordan is a guy who can get open and he's a unique weapon. He can be a mismatch at times. We remember the touchdown that he scored in the Browns, in the playoff game against the Browns, where he ran away from everybody. It really looked like Brevin Jordan was starting to click with C.J. Stroud, and then he tears the ACL. Brevin Jordan's an intriguing one. Where does he land in the tight end room? I think he lands kind of where he was as sort of a more of a weapon than a tight end. He's a very willing blocker. He's just not a very big dude. And the wild card in all this is Nick Caley. We don't know. We really have no idea how Nick Caley wants to structure things. You know, what exactly is the offense going to look like? We do know that he was a tight ends coach, so I think that's good. So I think Brevin Jordan is going to get every chance to contribute. But I think as of right now, if I had to guess, he lands as more of kind of like a hybrid weapon type that they have a package for than an inline tight end. I don't think he's equipped to be an inline tight end. If I were a betting man, what would I make the odds that Stover gets more snaps than Schultz? I would put, okay, we're just doing who gets more snaps this year, Dalton Schultz or Cade Stover. I'd make Dalton the favorite for sure. I do think Kaylee coming in is going to help Schultz. I think Kaylee coming in is going to help that tight end room. He's been a good tight end coach. He's been around some good tight ends, has developed some tight ends. And with Schultz, it's not so much a matter of development. It's a matter of getting him back to where he was in that prove-it year of 2023. If they get that version of Dalton Schultz, willing blocker, reliable pass receiver, made some big plays, made the biggest play of the season that year with that ball that he ripped away from that defensive back on the Titans in that week 15 game it was, the Case Keenum game. So I think Schultz is the favorite. Look, Schultz is a veteran guy who I think they like. I think they know he probably was put in bad positions last year. Now, the thing is, maybe he's not out there in as many blocking situations as he was. Maybe Stover gets more of a look there. But I'll put Schultz more snaps than Stover at minus 175 to minus 200. I think a clear favorite to me, because we just don't know. Stover didn't finish the season. Going into his second year as an NFL player and only his fourth year playing tight end in his whole life. So I think I would take Schultz in that one. And I get what you're saying. First half of the year odds and second half of the year odds. I don't want to overthink it, Brian. I don't want to get too deep on this podcast on this one. I just think Schultz is going to wind up playing more snaps. I get where you're going. That maybe this is where I think you're going. Is it maybe by the end of the year, Stover is the guy, which could very well be. So maybe those are my first half of the year odds that I gave you. And the second half of the year, it's closer to a pick 'em, that kind of thing. Does that satisfy you? Thumbs up. We good, Brian? Watching in Iowa or listening in Iowa? All right, cool. Appreciate the question. Mickey asks, who will be the next Texan in the Ring of Honor? So right now we've got J.J. Watt, who went in a couple seasons ago. We've got Andre Johnson, who was the first in. We've got Bob McNair, who founded the team. If I had to guess, the next Ring of Honor member for the Texans is going to be a player. I don't think it's going to be an administrative person or a broadcaster or anything like that. Although I think someday Mark Vandermeer should go in to the Texans Ring of Honor after he retires, which if I had to guess is a long, 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 long time from now. That would be my guess. I think Vandy, like me, dies with a microphone in his hand. We're very similar creatures. Or just sitting in the microphone sitting in front of me on the counter like it is right now. The next Texans Ring of Honor member, the only thing we have to go off of, I'm going to put Bob McNair off to the side because he's obviously a separate category. As far as players go, the only ones that have gone in are guys that are either Hall of Famers or soon will be for sure Hall of Famers. So that's the big question for me with the Ring of Honor has always been, what's the floor for someone going in the Ring of Honor? Clearly, this is not something they want to make sure they've got somebody going in every year, and nor do I want it to be. If we go several years till the next Ring of Honor member, I'm cool with that. I'd always thought that of the guys that are out there who could go in the Ring of Honor, look, if we're looking at accomplishment, Dwayne Brown was a former first-team All-Pro, but I think Dwayne left under some very, very, just some messy circumstances, I'll call it. Arian Foster being back around the team again, him leading the team onto the field against the Chargers in that playoff game, tells me that there's been, not that Arian was ever sideways with the team, but Arian always seemed like a guy who just, he retired and then he just didn't want to bother with anybody, which is fine, as is his right to do. I really like Arian a lot. But the fact that he's maybe back around the team doing stuff like that would seem to indicate that maybe he's a Ring of Honor guy. You know, again, he's not a Hall of Famer, although I will say this about Arian Foster. When he was healthy in those seasons he was a Texan, healthy Arian Foster is one of the best running backs I've ever seen in the history of the league, period. Healthy Arian Foster. Problem was he wasn't healthy all the time. But 2010, 2011, 2012, Arian Foster was the man. I've kind of softened my stance a little bit about it needing to be somebody who's in a Hall of Fame conversation. If Arian went in, look, whoever goes in, I'll be happy for them. This is not, this is not the end of the, we aren't deciding to go to war with anybody or anything like that. This is the Ring of Honor for the Houston Texans. I always thought Jonathan Joseph was an interesting one. I don't think J.Joe was ever a first-team All-Pro, but he made a couple Pro Bowls at least with the Texans. Was around forever. You know, he was with the team for 9 seasons. Just a great Houston Texan. Came here in free agency. So I would say if it comes from a player, if it comes from somebody who is a retired Texan, it could very well be that the next Texan in the Ring of Honor is playing on the team right now. You know, I don't think John Weeks makes it, just the nature of his position. You know, long snapper. Now, he played the most games in Texans history. Look, if they put John Weeks in the Ring of Honor, I would be cheering loudly. I love John Weeks. But I just, you know, again, it's got to be about accomplishment at an elite level compared to your peers. And long snapper is a tough one to quantify. So if it were to come from Texans that former Texans or retired Texans, I would power rank. I would put my 4 or 5 guys at Jonathan Joseph, Arian Foster. I'll throw Dwayne in there just because, but I don't think that's going to happen. DeAndre Hopkins, for sure. I don't think the team has any ill will towards DeAndre. I think that was more of a Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby thing. If anything, they'd probably put DeAndre in just as a big middle finger to Jack Easterby. So DeAndre, I think, is very much up there. I mean, DeAndre was on a Hall of Fame track for a while, and then these last few seasons, through suspension and injury, that's become derailed. But I don't even, like, I don't know who I'm even missing here that would be in that conversation. So appreciate the question, Mickey. Middle Screen, Coach Middle Screen is in, says it's always crazy to look back at true sliding door moments where decisions that are made truly change the trajectory and outlook of history. No truer moment might have been the 2021 offseason for the Texans. Franchise was in disarray, no head coach, no GM, just wasted a year of Deshaun Watson's prime. They had no draft capital and no real young talent on the roster. It was becoming decision time for Cal McNair to name who was going to be in charge of overseeing the, quote, massive overtaking that was going to be the Texans' rebuild. Cal had hired Korn Ferry, the search firm, and assembled a group of consultants to do the legwork in identifying the coach and GM. There was also the ever-present Jack Easterby lurking behind the scenes, reportedly working to undermine the work being done by Korn Ferry. Rumor surfaced that Korn Ferry had identified their two-headed monster that will tag team the Texans rebuild. Who was it? Omar Khan and Brian Schottenheimer was the only, he's right about this, Middle Screen is the only guy to have interviewed with the Texans for their head coaching job. And I think without going into a ton of detail, because Middle Screen actually sends in screen grabs of tweets and things like that, the overall sentiment here, I see where he's going, which is, did Jack Easterby essentially save the Texans' bacon by going into Cal McNair and saying, I can deliver Nick Caserio to you on a silver platter? Because that is what happened. Now, Jack Easterby did a ton of damage to the Texans. I don't know how much of it was irreparable damage, because they're back on track football-wise, irreparable damage. I can't speak to the behind the scenes and the damage that Jack may have done, either psychologically or professionally, to people when he was just trying to seemingly take over every aspect of the business. That was not good. But it was Jack Easterby who went and got Nick Caserio. And then, you know, a year and change later, Easterby's out. It's an interesting point, because here we are with DeMeco Ryans as the head coach and Nick Caserio as the GM. And I think they're one of the better tandems at GM and head coach in the league. I think overall, I think it's safe to say Nick Caserio's done a good job as the general manager. You know, they need to get past the divisional round and they need to keep winning. And you're going to have to figure a lot of things out once you pay CJ Stroud. But considering how he's done once he took that year or so to clean up Bill O'Brien's mess, because that 2021 season was all about just cleaning up the nuclear mess left behind by just the absurd awfulness of Bill O'Brien, GM. So are we, Middle Screen, are you telling me to credit Jack Easterby? Because I'll tell you who's probably taking credit for this somewhere, the Texans' resurgence. Jack Easterby is my guess.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I appreciate your middle screen. Jerry emails in and says, rules talk. They tabled the tush push at the league meetings. Do you think it still gets banned? Also, what's the one rule change you'd like to see that hasn't been proposed? Do I think it still gets banned? This is where it appears to be going. I'm just reading the tea leaves. I've not talked to anybody involved in this. My recommendation all along has been, and keep in mind, I'll preface by saying I'm somebody who does not like the tush push. I just don't like the aesthetics of it. I think it looks stupid. That's my reason. It looks stupid. Everybody's got their own reason. You can say my reason's stupid, but that's my reason. I think it looks dumb. My suggestion all along had been to go back to the way it used to be in 2005, 2004, and before, where you weren't allowed to pull or push your teammates with the ball in their hands. You couldn't shove teammates forward and whatnot. You go back to that, which to me makes sense. I hate watching guys shove their teammates forward. Let the ball carrier do his thing, and then if he gets tackled, he gets tackled. I would go back to that, and then that by definition squashes the tush push. Then just Jalen Hurts has to go back to being a normal quarterback who runs a QB sneak, who can, you know, a quarterback who can squat 8 jillion pounds. Do I think it still gets banned? Yeah, in a way, yes. I think that's what we're going to go back to. I think they're going to change the rule, because Goodell has even alluded to that over the last 48 hours. Change the rule back to where you just can't push your teammates when they have the ball in their hands. As far as what other rule change I'd like to see that hasn't been proposed, I'm with some of the people out there. I'm a little surprised they didn't address the Pat Mahomes fake slide. These quarterbacks that are taking advantage of the protections that they have under the rule, I'm surprised that that wasn't proposed by anybody. Again, either the competition committee or teams have to propose these things. So that's one. I would at least like to see that addressed. Aside from that, there's just other things. I think there's things that there's rules that college has that I really like, and there's rule that the NFL doesn't do, and vice versa. I would like to see the NFL go to what college does in the last, I forget if it's 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever of the half in the game, to where they stop the clock to move the chains. I'd like to see the NFL go to that. You know, that injects more drama and potential for comebacks late in games. So I would like to see that. The other thing, I think the NFL pass interference rule is way too punitive and leaves way too much in the hands of the officials, where pass interference is spotted with an assumption that the ball was going to get caught 40 yards downfield. Then a referee with a flag can control 40 or 50 yards worth of field position. To me, is just crazy. I like the college rule where it's a 15-yard penalty. And people are going to say all the time, well, you're just going to see pass interference then all the time. If you don't want to give up a 40-yard bomb, then you're just going to see guys interfering all the time. No, you won't. You don't see it in college all the time. You don't see it anymore in college than you do the NFL. You don't. So those are a couple of things. Taz, I like to think this is Taz the wrestler emailing my show. What's your preference power rankings at 25th overall among guys who have been mocked to the Texans at that spot? Okay. I'll do five. How's that? Five players. And do you want me to count up or count down? I got to think who the five are first. Excuse me. This pollen in the air. All right. Counting down. Fifth, I would say Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle from Michigan, who's very freaky for a guy who's 330, 340 pounds. Very freaky. That would be the one defensive player that at 25 I would entertain. Malachi Starks would have been on this list, the safety out of Georgia. There's just nowhere to put him anymore. They've got too many safeties. But if they had not made the C.J. Gardner-Johnson trade, I would have Malachi Starks in my top five. So that's sort of an honorable mention. But I would say Kenneth Grant. I would say Kelvin, number four, Kelvin Banks, the tackle, possibly guard out of the University of Texas, who I like. Number three, Donovan Jackson. He's from right here in Houston. So is Kelvin Banks. Donovan Jackson, the offensive lineman from Ohio State. Went to Episcopal here in Houston. So that would be number three. Number two, Tyler Booker, to me, is still the offensive lineman that would be at the top of my list of that position of interior offensive lineman. He's number two overall. Number one is Matthew Golden, the wide receiver out of Texas, who to me has a lot of Tank Dell in his game. And you know who I don't think is going to play for the Texans this year? Tank Dell. So I would Matthew Golden would be number one on my list at 25. Now, if Nick decides to move up or down, that changes the calculus on everything. But at 25, that's my power ranking. Grant, 5. Banks, 4. Jackson, 3. Tyler Booker, 2. And Matthew Golden, number 1. Next one. Jessica says, I heard you and Brandon Scott, shout out to B. Scott, he was on with me on Tuesday on Payne and Pendergast, talking about the week one starting O-line being in the building right now. All she says is, please tell me that's not the case. I don't think it's the case. If you missed it, Brandon Scott said he thinks that the 5 guys who are going to be starting in week one for the Texans on the offensive line are on the roster in the building right now. The point being that he doesn't think a rookie is going to crack this group, that D'Amico Ryans has made a big deal this offseason about the amount of veteran experience that they've brought into the building there along the offensive line. I think it's an astute observation, but I think that they're going to draft somebody. I want Matthew Golden. I think they're going to take an offensive lineman. And if they do take an offensive lineman, I think it's going to be with the idea that that person is going to get a really good look at starting. To be clear, I put up a poll as to whether or not people were hoping that Brandon was right, and a vast majority were hoping he is wrong about that. Thank you, Jessica. Female representation. I like that. All right. Rufus in the Heights. Let me just say the name Rufus is awesome. Awesome. What are the position group competitions that pop the most for you right now post-free agency? I've got four. I was going to say I got three. Why not do four? I'm not getting paid by the hour, whatever. I would say tight end. I think that's somewhere that's sneaky, the 25th overall pick. I think if Tyler Warren or Colston Loveland get in the range of 25, that gets very interesting to me. But I think tight end is an interesting room, period, right now because of the different skill sets of the guys in there. And I'll just talk Schultz, Stover, and Brevin Jordan. The different skill sets, the need for Dalton Schultz to become more of the player he was 2 years ago than the player he was last year. I think that's a necessity for this team, given what he's getting paid. And number three, the fact that Nick Caley is a former tight ends coach whose ability to coach up and develop tight ends should matter in that room. That should be a better performing room than it was last season. So that's an intriguing one for me, not so much from a competitive standpoint, but just with the upside of Nick Caley now being the head coach. Wide receiver not named Nico Collins or Christian Kirk is fascinating to me because, again, I think there's going to be a rookie or two plunked down in there to go alongside some guys who are really having trouble getting open when they've been a pro is Xavier Hutchinson and John Mechie. The guys they brought in on cheap free agent deals, Justin Watson and Braxton Berrios, intrigue me. So that's one. The two biggest ones for me are linebacker and offensive line. EJ Speed getting plugged into that room. The linebacker room is really intriguing to me because you already had Azeez Alshire, who's going to start, and he'll play every snap every week if he's healthy. But then for the other linebacker spot, and I say the other linebacker spot because they spent most of their time with two linebackers on the field last year. If Jalen Petrie's healthy, he's the fifth defensive back or the second and a half linebacker, however you look at him in that role he plays up in the slot near the line of scrimmage. Henry Toa did most of the starting last year. Christian Harris is probably the most talented guy in that room when he's healthy. And now EJ Speed is here, and EJ Speed played 98% of the snaps for the Colts last year. So you got three guys who all think they can start battling it out for one position. That's super intriguing. That's a training camp, a ready-made, tailor-made training camp battle. And then offensive line, which, I mean, the only thing I can say with any degree of certainty, I can't say anything with any degree of certainty. The only thing I can say that I feel good about in terms of it being an accurate prediction is Cam Robinson's going to play left tackle. I feel strongly about that for what they're paying him, for what he's competing with. He'll be left tackle. And then it's Katie bar the door for the other four spots. because all these guys you have are so positionless right now, or, you know, they've got position versatility. Titus Howard can play guard and tackle. Lakin Tomlinson and Ed Ingram can play either guard position, I suppose. Jared Patterson and Juice Scruggs can play center and guard. Nick Broeker, throw him in there. He can play tackle and guard. So that, just to, honestly, what's the five? What's the combo of five? The first set of team drills in July, what's the first group of five that we see together? I have no fucking earthly clue. And that is fun, as long as they play well. All right, let's see here. We've got a few more. BK, you've got a long one here again. He says, I know this is primarily a Houston Texans podcast, so I'm not going to force feed you my Cougar takes. However, I think Texan fans should appreciate what this team has done and frankly learn from the Cougs. All right, I'm intrigued. I believe the Houston Cougars are the first team from Houston to make Patrick Mahomes do the surrender cobra while going down in defeat. U of H over Tech in Lubbock in front of his wife. Okay, I like that. Anything that involves Mahomes bowing and kneeling to Houston, I'm down for. The Cougs just beat Peyton Manning's Vols at Lucas Oil Stadium. I like that. Texan fans should like that. So far, so good, BK. Three, if any team in college basketball has a swarm mentality, it's the Cougs. Tennessee had 15 points at the half. That is true. We don't talk much college basketball on this podcast, but I am taking all 4.5 of the points that Vegas is giving me in that Duke v. Cougs game. I just don't think Duke has seen this degree of swarmy defense college basketball wise. And I knew Duke is super talented. They got multiple lottery picks on the team. It's an older Cougs team. They can score a little bit. They've got three guys that can really shoot the basketball. All right, BK also says, secondly, Sean's constant mock draft updates got me thinking, what are the top music cuts in sports? All right, I'm going to save that one, BK. I'm going to save that one because I need the actual music to go with it. It sounds a little stupid if I'm like, da-da-dun, da-da-dun. But good job, BK. And thank you for reminding me that John Runyon is a punk-ass bitch. Although you said puck-ass bitch in your email. P-U-C-K. I think you meant punk-ass bitch. All right, three more quick ones. Sean, you're a gambler, so explain to me, why are the Rockets' odds to win the title so drastically different than where they're seated right now? They're the second seed in the Western Conference, but they're seventh or eighth to win the West on most odds boards behind OKC, the Lakers, Denver, and Golden State on all of them, and on most of them, Memphis, Minnesota, and the Clippers. I think it's pretty simple. Seth and I actually talked about this today on Payne and Pendergast. I think for what the Rockets are doing right now, if we're just talking subjective power rankings, then you can say they're a top four or five team overall in the league. You know, that's just the standings. And people are going to say, well, they haven't beaten any good teams lately. Yeah, but they beat a shit ton of good teams earlier in the year. They had one week where they beat Cleveland twice and Boston. So they've beaten good teams this year. They just haven't done it lately. The reason why they're so far down the odds board is because they're not a proven commodity like these other teams, or at least have proven commodities on their team, star players. I know Fred VanVleet's won a championship and Dylan Brooks is playing a lot of big games, as has Steven Adams. The core crux, the guys that carry this team when they need carrying for the most part are young guys who've never played a playoff game. Alperen Şengün, Jalen Green, Amen Thompson. That's their big three, okay? And that's 5 years from now when they're competing for championships. Those three guys will all be on the team. None of those other guys are going to be on the team that I just mentioned. VanVleet and Dylan Brooks and Steven Adams. And so I think that's why they're so far down the list. You look at the other seven teams. OKC, of course, is going to be ahead of them because they've lost like 10 games all year. They're just a good inexperienced maybe, but a good basketball team. A great basketball team. Lakers have LeBron James and Luka Doncic. So, of course, they're going to be ahead of the Rockets. Denver just won the championship 2 years ago. Of course, they're going to be ahead of the Rockets. Golden State still has Steph Curry and Draymond Green. And even though they're behind the Rockets, they've got a championship pedigree. That's why. Again, we're talking betting odds here. Minnesota just made the Western Conference Finals last year. People remember that. The Clippers have James Harden and Kawhi Leonard, two guys at their peaks who were first-team All-NBA players and aren't super far off. They're old, but they still play a pretty high level of basketball. Memphis is the one that I'm struggling with, and I'm with you on that, Eddie. Memphis is the one I'm struggling with. I don't get why the Rockets are so far behind the Memphis Grizzlies in the odds. But they may face them in the playoffs, and they'll get to prove why they should have been ahead of them in the first place. All right, two more quick ones. Jorge in Sugarland says, I've heard you say you're watching Stranger Things. How far along are you? What do you think? Also, what's one series you haven't watched yet that you've wanted to get to? I'll answer the last one first. Mad Men. I've not watched Mad Men, and there's so many quotes and memes from Mad Men that I know I need to watch it. I've heard it's great. I've heard, Sean, you'll love it. I believe you. I believe you that I'll love it. There's a lot of things I haven't watched that I know that I'll love, but Mad Men is the one series that I know I need to go watch. I've been told I need to go back and give Better Call Saul a second chance. It just took so long for the Better Call Saul universe to blend in with the Breaking Bad universe. If you're a prequel, you better be giving me those Easter eggs early on, man. If I'm having to wait around and sit through a whole season of Lenny from Laverne and Shirley as Saul's mentally ill brother, no, I'm not doing that. There's too much other good shit on TV. I've been told I need to go back and watch that. Stranger Things, I love. I'm really enjoying it. I'm midway through season 3 right now. So it's the one where they've picked up some Russian chitter chatter and they're, you know, the Russians have started to invade Hawkins, Indiana. So it's good, man. I'm really enjoying it. The only reason I started watching it is I did an event a week ago with Sean Astin, who played Bob on Stranger Things, played Rudy in the movie Rudy. You guys know who Sean Astin is. So I started watching it just so I would be at least a little well-versed in it for when we did our event. And it's taken me, man. It's gripped me. I like it a lot. Ephraim, last question is from Ephraim. Was that you behind home plate at the Astros game last night? He sent that this morning. Yes, it was. That was me sitting with my good friend Joe Sutton, who has those seats right there. Those are his seats. And I'm lucky enough to get invited a couple times a year to sit with him and his friends. He's got four seats right there, and I love it. The Diamond Club is the best. You got the included food, you got the good view, and the great company and fellowship of people like Joe Sutton. Great dude. So, yes, that was me. That was me. Those were not my seats. I cannot afford those seats. I can't afford one of those seats, let alone 81 games worth of four of those seats. All right. Again, thank you, everybody, for your emails this week. The next episode will be a mailbag next week, so get your questions in. I'm willing to go. If I'm only doing one episode, I'm willing to jumbo the mailbag. So send in your questions. We're getting closer and closer to the draft. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Again, subscribe, rate, and review the podcast as well. Big thanks to Jared Rowland, my producer, for getting the podcast out to all of you. So until next time, I will hopefully see all of you tomorrow morning for Nick Caserio joining me and Seth, if you're listening to this on Wednesday. So if not, if you're listening to this on Thursday, you can go back and listen to the Caserio interview on the Odyssey app on our podcast, the Payne and Pendergast podcast. So till then, I'll see you guys later. Take care. Appreciate you.